Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
On three, senior college football reporter Chris Lowe. Chris, I was making the joke earlier that nobody, not even my wife, has seen me, seen my chin because I've had a beard for so long. You might actually be one of those people. I think I met you like 18 or 19 years ago. You might have been one of the only people that's actually seen my chin in this conversation, man. What's going on?
It's good to be with you guys. Yeah, it's 18 years ago for me, somebody my age, that was just like 2 days ago.
Look, Chris, you've been around. You've done it a long time, man. We always appreciate your stuff. And we were having a conversation earlier about the toughest places to play in the NFL. The Falcons are heading on the road to the Minnesota Vikings. I don't want to know about the toughest home environments. We've had that conversation back and forth in terms of the SEC. What's your favorite SEC stadium to work at, man? Who's got the good buffet line up there in the press box?
You know, they're not as good as they used to be.
Oh, don't tell me that.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I was, gosh, just starting out in the business, and Mr. Bob Bradley was the SID at Clemson. You went to Clemson on a Saturday for a game circa 88, 89. It was like you were going to one of those sort of mom-and-pops country cooking restaurants out in the middle of nowhere, and you had green beans and macaroni and cheese and pinto beans, and you had chicken, baked chicken, fried chicken. It was as good as it got. And I remember way back at Notre Dame would have ribs and barbecue chicken in the press box. So it's unfortunately, those days are long gone. But, yeah, everybody had a pretty good spread. Auburn had a great spread. South Carolina had a great spread. You were hard-pressed if you went anywhere in the SEC, late 80s, early 90s, all the way up into the mid to late 90s, where they didn't feed you pretty well.
And Chris, I'm starving.
Yeah, I'm going to have to stop you because we've been talking about how hungry we are in the studio. But it's already been an interesting college football season. What's been the biggest surprise to you through week one and two?
Well, the first week it was Alabama just getting beat up the way they did by Florida State. I know there was a lot of, and there still is a lot of trepidation there because they've got Georgia coming up in a couple weeks, and that's going to be the telltale game. But you know, the fact that they lost was surprising, I guess, to lose to Florida State. But to lose by two touchdowns and just physically getting beat up, I didn't see that coming. I really didn't. I'd been to practice. I had been around that program a good bit in the preseason. And to see them go out there and just look like a team that at times was going through the motions, that was pretty shocking. I would say, you know, around the country, I wasn't surprised because I knew how good he was. But John Mathier is going to give or has given Oklahoma a completely different dynamic. His ability to run the football, he's a guy that just makes plays. They've been missing out on offense the last few years under Brent Venables. Well, he gives them that dimension now. And they're always going to play really good defense with Brent Venables there. I think the third thing would be Clemson. Clemson just has looked – I thought Clemson would be easily a top-five team, easily a shoe-in to be in the playoff. They haven't looked anything like it. They've been bad on offense. Kay Klubnik has been, you know, just a shadow of what he was last year. They haven't been able really to run the football. So I think out of the gate, those would be the three things. The fourth thing would probably be – and again, I want to temper it. We're bad in the media and among fans to overreact a week or two in the season. But boy, LSU looks like under Brian Kelly, they have the best defense they've had under him. Mm-hmm. They've got guys who can rush the passer. Harold Perkins is healthy, and they've got some really good players on the back end. So that defense looks to be what LSU fans are used to LSU looking like on defense when they've been at their best.
Well, Chris, let's talk about a surprise. Not a surprise. We were picking it, and I kind of said I thought Mississippi State had a chance to cover, but they flat out beat Arizona State. I know it was in Starkville, but you know Blake Shapen plays a pretty good game. What has Jeff Lebby got going on down there that they can upset a team that won the Big 12 last year and was a playoff team?
I was with Jeff in that program for a whole day back in Well, the Thursday before game week, and spent some time in Starkville and spent some time with Jeff and the team, you know, talked to Blake Chapin, talked to Brennan Thompson. There was a lot of optimism that they were going to be better. You know, Jeff brought in 65 new players. His Chapin was healthy. Brennan Thompson, they felt like, was really going to add to their ability to make explosive plays. And you saw that the other night against Arizona State. Just an awesome environment. I wasn't there. I watched it on television. Wish I would have been there, because when you're in Davis Wade Stadium, those cowbells are clanging and the next place is rocking the way it was. I've always thought it's as underrated a place to play if you're the opposing team as there is anywhere in the country. It's loud. The noise stairs are right on top of you. It is just a really, again, unless you're the opposing team, it's a great place to be on a Saturday night. But no, I mean, Levy has worked hard to bring in guys that can help him in the transfer portal. He feels like he's put together two pretty good high school classes. They still need another, at least one more, maybe two more. But they are a program I felt like would be improved. Like you guys, I didn't see them beating Arizona State. But it wasn't fluky. I mean, they made big plays. They got up early. And then when Arizona State turned the momentum of that game, let's give Mississippi State credit. They didn't panic. They came right back and made the play they had to win their biggest game in years. I'm tell you what, guys, that's a program that had been reeling ever since Mike Leach died. And there had been a lot of heartache, just a lot of bad days, gloomy days. You know, they go 2-10 last year. They fire Zach Arnett before his first season is even over. And then Saturday night was, I know, had to be therapeutic for that entire Mississippi State community, the fans, and that entire university.
Hanging out with Chris Lowe here on the Morning Shift, the On3 Senior College Football Reporter. Chris, you were talking about some of the surprises you've had. I want to talk about Florida for a minute. Their loss to South Florida this past weekend. What does Billy Napier need to do to be able to stay in his role as Florida head coach between now and the end of the season?
I thought what Billy did last year was almost Houdini-like, the way they started. You know, I was there for their game against Texas A&M. I guess that was the second or third week, and they looked like a team that was just hanging by a thread. I felt like Billy, probably his coaching career was hanging by a thread. And to his credit, you know, he never lost that football team, and they played a lot of good football down the stretch. This game last Saturday, to me, was even worse, because not only did they lose and look anemic on offense, but they lost to South Florida. And in that state, if you're Florida, you should never lose to South Florida. And that has nothing to do with what Alex Gullish has done at South Florida. He's done a tremendous job, but you can't lose a game like that when you've been there as long as Billy has at home. I said this last year, I'll say it again. He's going to have, you know, it was a Houdini-type deal last year. It's probably going to take a miracle for him to survive this year. Look at their schedule, guys, the rest of the way. They're at LSU. They're at Miami. They're home against Texas. They're at Texas A&M. That's the next four games. Now, they do get a bye between Miami and Texas. That's the next four games. And then they got to play Mississippi State. They get a bye. And then Georgia, at Kentucky, at Ole Miss, Tennessee at home, Florida State at home. You show me in that schedule whether they're going to be a 9 or even an 8 win team based on what we've seen to this point. I don't think people say, oh, let's get rid of them now. I've heard from Florida fans. I don't think you can do that, because you just completely crater your season. Kids start shutting it down. Players start shutting down. Your roster gets raided as far as transfers. So they owe it to those players and that team to try to make it through at least the next month and a half, if you're going to do it. But I don't see it. I think they're to the point there, the people that matter at Florida, where they're going to move on.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be tough. Another fan base, Chris, that I think is frustrated is Georgia. They're frustrated with the slow start against Austin Peay, I should say, last weekend. Now, they've got Tennessee coming up. Not as easy of a game, but Tennessee is without two corners. How big of a deal is that?
Well, the good news for Tennessee is they played two kids who played pretty well. They got Colton Hood, the transfer portal from Colorado, and he's been one of their best players in their first couple of games. They've got a freshman at the other corner who's played really well, but he's a freshman. You know, he's not seen – he hasn't gone up against a Noah Thomas or Zachariah Branch or some of the athletes Georgia has. So that's a tough assignment. So while they miss Jamon McCoy, they're going to miss Gibson. Those kids have played a lot of football and played at a high level. They've at least got some guys who've been tested in the first two games. See, I think the bigger matchup in this game is which offensive line plays the best. Who can protect? Can Georgia protect Gunner? You know, can Georgia play well enough in the run game that they can at least keep Tennessee's defense honest? And the same for Tennessee. Can they protect Joey Aguilar? They've been able to do that in the first couple of games. He's run around and made some plays, but they haven't faced the defensive front the way they are against Georgia. And I know some people say, well, it always sort of gets down to the offensive line. Yeah, it does to some degree. But I bet you in this game, when this game's over, we're all going to look at it and say, well, Georgia won or Tennessee won because they played better in the offensive line. And I think that's what it gets down to. Listen, Georgia fans are always upset when they don't score 50 points and have 500 yards in those first couple games. You know, it's the offensive coordinator. But they didn't do this. They should have done more of that. I think this is not the first time we've heard that. You'll see a different Georgia offense. They're going to do some more things. They'll have to do some more things. And I know the lack of explosive plays in the pass game is something that's been unnerving for Georgia fans. But you know, Kirby said the other day, and he's right, it's sort of the way the teams are playing them. They just said, okay, you can have all the underneath stuff you want. We're not going to let you get behind us. Well, if you do that, if you continue to do that, then Georgia, I think, is going to be able to run the football and take advantage. They don't have that guy who's the automatic first down the way Brock Bowers was. I think we all know that. And that takes away from any offense. But I still think you're going to see Georgia do some different things and look a little bit different on offense against a really good Tennessee defense. Tennessee's legit up front. Their front seven is really good. This will be, I think, because Georgia's handled Tennessee pretty well since Josh Heupel's been there. That's sort of the next test for Heupel. You know, he's beaten Florida twice. He's beaten Alabama twice. He hasn't been able to beat Georgia. And that game a few years ago when it was 1-2 was hyped, but Georgia pretty much dominated that football game physically. I think this probably will be the best and most closely contested game these two teams have played since Heupel arrived in Knoxville in 21.
That's Chris Lowe on 3 Reporter. Chris, got a lot of stuff to digest this coming weekend, man, but I appreciate you hanging out with us.
You bet. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.